Let's look at RHI again. A former DUP special advisor has told the inquiry that the real power of the DUP resides in a tiny handful of Stormont special advisors. Timothy Kearns was giving evidence yesterday. I see he's in front of the inquiry today again. I'm watching him now. And he said that Timothy Johnson, who is now the DUP's chief executive, was and is so senior within the party that he is second only to the leader. Now, that would put the unelected figure above the deputy leader, Nigel Dodds, MPs, MLAs, and even, prior to the collapse of devolution, Stormont ministers. The newsletter's political editor, Sam McBride, has been helping us big time with our coverage. Well, that's one hell of a claim, Sam.
Morning, Stephen. Yes, and you were talking about salaries just before this. The one thing which I think we can certainly say about special advisors is that if happiness is linked to salaries, they would be very happy people, because in many cases these are people getting or getting at that point. They obviously aren't getting it now because Stormont has collapsed. They were on, in some cases, £92,000. I think about the lowest that any of them were on at the end of Stormont, when it all tumbled down, was about probably £80,000. So in the context of Northern Ireland, even in the context of politics, salaries which are either commensurate with a minister or above a minister, which I think gives you a bit of a sense as to how significant these people were.
To be fair to them, Sam, they're very, very smart people.
Some of them are. Some of them, I think it's fair to say, aren't. But some of them certainly are very capable people, are very impressive people. And I think one of the difficulties here and one of the frustrations for some special advisors or for some former special advisors is that the public perception now of their craft, if you like, is so negative. It is seen as something which is, I suppose, grasping, something which is operating in the shadows, something which is not entirely... something which is healthy within a democratic system, when actually some of these people are very honourable people, people who operated to assist their minister, people who were there to remind, if you like, the civil service that their minister had a democratic mandate for whatever he or she was trying to do. And that's actually a very important part of a healthy, functioning democratic system. But the difficulty here is that some of the behaviour of these individuals and some of the power of these individuals seem to have gone, on the evidence of Mr. Kearns and Mr. Bell, seems to have gone far beyond what they were entitled to have. And in the case of what Mr. Kearns was saying yesterday, some very significant evidence that he believed the DUP was concerned that the media might get hold of the real role which Timothy Johnston, who at that point was a special advisor in the First Minister's office, was having within the party, where he said that while he was being paid from public funds to operate as a special advisor to the First Minister, he was not only doing that, but he was also operating as a de facto chief executive of the party. Now, he now is a formal chief executive of the party, and they are paying for his salary because there are no special advisors. But the suggestion there was that he was going, and it was a very explicit suggestion, was that he was going beyond his remit as a special advisor, and he was actually really running very large aspects of how the party operated. So very significant and very unusual allegations from somebody who is still a serving DUP member. This is something which you tend to get off the record from DUP members, or you get from people who have left the DUP. It's very, very rare, if not unheard of, for somebody in the position of Timothy Kearns, who's still in the party, who says he still has good relationships with a lot of senior people in the party, to speak out in as candid a way as he did yesterday.
Timothy Johnston has been mentioned quite a few times so far. And look, we know who he is. We have dealt with him because part and parcel of what we do. But the public, he's not known to the public. Give us some of the background, Sam, if you have the detail as to who Timothy Johnston is. He's been with the party for many years, right?
Yes, and I mean, I should make clear that, I mean, Timothy Johnston is certainly somebody who is in the category of special advisor, who is very sharp, who is very capable, and that is why he has the power. That's why he has, I suppose, the delegated power, because ultimately the leader could have removed him at any point if they had decided they didn't want him. He was given that power, he was given that responsibility because he was seen as capable, he was seen as somebody who was much more capable than a lot of DUP MLAs and some DUP ministers, and he was trusted to really act as an emissary for Peter Robinson. His background is as an accountant. He was in the Ulster Unionist Party for a period, I'm not sure how long. As a very young man, he came into the DUP around the time or just after the Belfast Agreement. And really, very quickly, Peter Robinson identified his talent. He promoted him very quickly. And by the time that we got to about 2005, 2006, he was the DUP's Director of Communications, so he was their chief spin doctor, if you like. And then he was very quickly into Stormont when Stormont came back in 2007. First of all, as a special advisor to Ian Paisley as the First Minister. Then very quickly, when Peter Robinson succeeded him, he was at Peter Robinson's right-hand side. And really, he and Richard Bullock were the two crucial special advisors. Mr. Kearns yesterday described those two spads and the leader, whether it was Arlene Foster or Peter Robinson, as the triumvirate who essentially ran the DUP and on his evidence were more significant than, as you've heard, even somebody like Nigel Dodds, who is the Westminster leader.
Yeah, someone from within the DUP has just this moment texted me and said, totally agree with Kearns' assessment of the power of Timothy Johnson. Obviously, Timothy Johnson will make his own testimony. I think he already has to the inquiry as to what power he does or does not have. I do think, though, and Sam, you've already said this, I do think when we're talking about the likes of Timothy Johnson and Richard Bullock, to be fair to both of them, I've dealt with them many times over the years. They're smart people, and I don't think there's anyone who is going to dispute their intellect. What this inquiry is looking at and what some of the evidence has looked at is how much power did the likes of Timothy Johnson have? And why is the inquiry looking at that? Why is that relevant, Sam?
Well, it's relevant for a very simple reason. Arlene Foster in December 2016, when Jonathan Bell came out and alleged that he had been ordered by other DUP special advisors, and he named Andrew Crawford and Timothy Johnson as having had some role in this, really via instructing his special advisor at that time, Timothy Kearns. He was really saying that it was possible within the structures of the DUP for those people to order a minister or his special advisor to do something. Arlene Foster, in her statement to the Assembly, was very clear that Mr. Bell was the minister. He was responsible. The buck stopped with him, and that was that. And it was a very simple view of the world. It was the way that the system is meant to operate. It is the way that legally it operates. It is true, as Arlene Foster said, that the minister is responsible for what goes on within his or her department. But what we're getting here is the allegation that while technically on paper that is how it operates, there was almost a parallel system operating here. It was understood by DUP members. It was understood by senior civil servants. It was accepted by those people that the First Minister's special advisers had a level of seniority where they were able to intervene in certain situations. They were able to do things. Those people, in terms of Timothy Johnston and Andrew Crawford, deny that they in any way tried to keep the scheme open when it was running out of control. So there is a dispute in the evidence there as to what happened. But one aspect of this is whether it would even have been possible, did they have that power? And that's why this is so important.
Let's hear some of the testimony from the inquiry yesterday. The inquiry counsel, Donal Lunny, asked Timothy Kearns, he's one of the special advisors, or was, about what he perceived as the DUP SPAD hierarchy.
Another issue, apart from from whom you took instructions, was an issue that doesn't seem to be controversial amongst many of the witnesses who provided us with witness statements, and that is that there was a hierarchy amongst the special advisers within the DUP, and at the top of that hierarchy was Timothy Johnson.
That would have been my understanding throughout my time in the Democratic Unionist Party.
That was your understanding. It seems to have been Dr. McCormick's understanding. Mrs. Foster says there was no hierarchy per se in her witness statements, but that the First Minister's SPAD's views might have been given more weight because they're coming from the First Minister's special advisor. But Mr. Johnson appears to say in his witness statements that there was no hierarchy. But you certainly always perceived there to be one.
I think I can even go further than that. There's not one elected representative, not one party employee or special advisor who did not recognise that Mr. Johnson was very much at the top of the tree within the Democratic Unionist Party.
And that is something which operates within the Democratic Unionist Party. Certainly not consistent with the code, but it's a practice that they enforce and endorse, isn't it?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
At least that's what your evidence is.
Well, that's my evidence, yes.
Yes.
And one particular thing I just want to take you to in your witness statement where you mention Mr. Johnson and his position of seniority. It's a WIT 20181. And I just want to clarify what precisely you're saying.
Is this one of his statements, Mr.
This is Mr. Cairns's most recent statement.
Thank you very much.
of last week. And it's the bottom paragraph on that page, so if we could maximise the bottom half. Thank you. You say, Timothy Johnson was and is a powerful individual within the DUP. He ran all matters relating to the party. When I was a party employee in the policy unit, even the mundane activity of communicating absences and sickness was attended to by Timothy Johnson. He controlled all party matters and was viewed as being the most senior DUP employee by elected representatives and staff. I believe that Mr. Johnson, in running party matters while a SPAD, was operating outside of what he was permitted to do. This would obviously be problematic for the DUP if the media were to get hold of the story. So it's that penultimate sentence. I believe that Mr. Johnson, in running party matters while a SPAD, was operating outside of what he was permitted to do, that I want to explore with you. So what precisely did you mean by that?
This is obviously in the context of the text message, is that correct, Mr. Lennon?
It's in the context of a text message in December 2016 where you talk about the SPADs running the show, or there been a perception that the SPADs were running the show.
Well, I think we'll probably come to this later in the evidence, but there's a 26th of June meeting where Mr. Johnson, myself and Mr. Bell were at. This was obviously, I would have considered, an internal party.
Sorry, is this June 2015?
June 2015, sorry, 26th of June 2015.
Mm-hmm. Is it the meeting after you returned?
Just before my return.
There were actually three meetings.
There was two meetings on the 11th of June and then one meeting on the 26th of June.
Well, that you were involved in.
That I was involved in.
Yeah. Yes,
well, there was two meetings I was involved in. Sorry, it's getting complicated, Mr. Chairman.
I think the evidence we have from Mr. Bell, which may or may not be right, is that there were three meetings. There was one in which he and Mr. Johnson were involved, and one in which you and Mr. Johnson were involved, and then a final meeting where you all got together.
I don't know that would be my evidence, but
I think that's
we will come on to look at that. You're setting the context for these comments that you've made about Mr. Johnson operating outside of what he was permitted to do as a special advisor.
Well, it's within the context of the text message I think I supplied to Mr. Bullock at the time. What I'm getting at there is there was a prevailing interest within the media at the time of the RHI story breaking about the function of special advisors and what they were and what they were not doing and what they did and did not know. And I think I was pointing out that the meeting on the 26th of June 2015 between myself, Mr. Bell and Mr. Johnson would have been a party meeting. I would have taken it to be a party meeting, and that was chaired, called and run by Mr. Johnston. And I felt that was probably reflective of a role he had within the party, where if you were, as I say there, a policy officer and administrative staff within the Democratic Unionist Party or whatever your role, Mr. Johnson would have taken your absences, staff reviews would have been conducted by him. At one point in time in 2014, there was a weekly meeting of all staff and party headquarters that was chaired by Mr. Johnston. That was only party staff. There's no other special advisors there. So I just think it's reflective that Mr. Johnston had a very powerful role within the party as well.
So you saw him as doing a lot more than only providing advice to his appointing authority?
Absolutely. Mr. Johnston's influence was seen from the party top to bottom.
Well, that's interesting testimony from Timothy Cairns. Obviously, Timothy Johnson has a different version of events. If you want to see all of the coverage that's been given so far, rhiinquiry.org or our BBC News website. Let's have a listen as the Inquiry Counsel, Donal Lunny, asks Timothy Kearns about his claims that he raised allegations of bullying from Jonathan Bell with Peter Robinson when he was First Minister.
You're asked to clarify what your story was and how it differed from the party narrative, and if you contend that it did not differ from that narrative, explain your reference to your willingness to fit your story in with the said narrative and the DUP's best interests. And you say, I believe that Mr. Robinson should be exposed for protecting Mr. Bell. I assumed the party would not wish for this to be stated in the Sunday Life. Clearly, I believed myself and the DUP may have slightly different stories. So that's your explanation of the reference to fitting your story in.
That's correct.
So Mr. Bell interprets that reference to fitting your story in as perhaps you being willing to tell untruths about him, to smear him.
And that's clearly not what the text message is in reference to. It's, you know, the huge question, I think, for Mr. Robinson is, if he did receive allegations or did receive comment from other people in relation to Mr. Bell's behaviour, I suppose the question that, if I was a journalist, I would ask is, well, why did Mr. Robinson appoint Mr. Bell to the position that he was in? And I suppose, presupposing a journalist's question, if we're going to go down that line.
Well, that's precisely what that piece of your statement indicates. And the clear inference from it, in accordance with what you say, is that you were prepared to modify whatever it was you said about Mr. Bell to protect Mr. Robinson.
Well, I wasn't prepared to do that. In my view, it was the party that were prepared to do that.
That may be true, but you were prepared to fit in with the party narrative.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
There are no two ways of looking at what is meant by a party narrative in this country. It means, I suggest to you, that the party may have a version that may be closer or farther away from the truth. But that is what the party says.
That's correct.
You were prepared to contribute to whatever the party said.
That's correct.
That seems a rather unpleasant way to run a party.
I think that would be a question for the Democratic Unionist Party. I wasn't in the leadership or the press strategy at that
time. Please understand what I'm saying. If a political party decides to have a particular narrative, which you know not to be the whole truth, do you say that's a good thing?
I don't think I am. I'm saying that's probably a question for the party and for the party officer.
But you were prepared to fit in with the narrative.
I was.
Yes.
And you would have known, with your legal background, and if we look at the affirmation today or the oath, that people swear that it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And the whole truth is a very important facet of that affirmation or oath.
That's correct.
And what you were essentially prepared to do was to tell a part of the story, what you say is a truthful story, Mr. Bell's misbehaviour towards you, but you were willing not to tell the whole truth, the part about Mr. Robinson's alleged failure to deal with that.
I think the difficulty for me at that time, if I could say, is I wasn't part of the party machinery. And I think at that point in time, I was getting contacted day and daily by journalists who were... my phone was ringing constantly from journalists in and around that period of time. And it was at a point then where I think I was, you know, as I say to Mr. Bullock, I'm on my own. That was that point in relation to that. I don't have a press machine. I don't have an executive information service that's working for me. I'm fielding phone calls from journalists constantly. And I suppose I'm looking for help here with that.
Help to do what?
Well, for the party maybe to take on some of the press burden of people contacting me. Although I wasn't officially an employee of the party or a member of the party, I suppose I was saying, look, I'm looking for some help here with the journalists who are telephoning me constantly as to how I'm going to handle that.
If your experience is right, you had been the recipient of appalling treatment from Mr. Bell, one way or the other. You knew Mr. Bell had a very deficient character in many ways. And you felt that you could truthfully describe that. But you also believed that you couldn't truthfully describe that without facing the question, well, if this man was so unsuited to be a politician, never mind a minister, you would have to be asked, well, who was he appointed by? And what do you say about him? And you weren't prepared to do that.
Well, I think I say I am prepared to do that. It's if the party are prepared to go along with me to do that. I think in my statement I do say that I'm prepared to do that. I offer the willingness to do that.
What if the party weren't prepared for that?
Well, ultimately they weren't, so I went with their line, Mr. Sharma.
And that's politics, is it?
That's politics, I'm afraid. It's a grubby world. Mm.
I think that's something of an understatement, if you don't mind me saying it.
I think you're correct, Mr. Chairman.
Well, my goodness, Sam, right at the end there, politics is a grubby world, and the chair of that inquiry saying that's an understatement.
That's right, and I think it's difficult to dispute that in the context of some of the evidence which has been heard over recent days. There was a degree, as you heard there at the end, of agreement between both the witness and the chairman as to their disillusionment, if you like, with what happened here, and certainly from some of the evidence which Mr. Kearns gave yesterday, the sense was of somebody who certainly is not, as Mr. Bell has suggested, part of a DUP smear campaign to get him, part of the DUP party machine. There were a lot of places yesterday where he was speaking in ways which I think would have been deeply unwelcome to people in Dundella Avenue and the DUP's headquarters in East Belfast. And I think that there was a sense in that last episode there where there was a conflict between the political expediency of what might be in the interests of the DUP and getting the whole truth into the public domain.
Sam, we have 90 seconds left this morning. I've seen you tweeting and reporting that Arlene Foster's answer during the interview that I did with her, when she was asked if she knew why the cost controls had been delayed, and some of what Timothy Kearns has said in evidence, is going to be a big question.
That's right. This is about the phone call between between Mr. Kearns and Mrs. Foster and her two key advisers, which he says took place the day before your programme, where you interviewed her in December 2016. She said in that interview very clearly she had no idea about why cost controls were delayed. Mr. Kearns says he told her in that call the day before. There's other evidence that her advisers were told by other means in the days preceding that. So there is going to be a lot of focus on what Mrs. Foster knew, on when she knew it, and on whether she was entirely telling the public everything that she knew at that point and then later in the Assembly.
And might Timothy Kearns be asked about that during his session today at the RTI?
I think that is where we're likely to go today, and also into the area where he says that he did delay cost controls, but it was on instructions from other people within the DUP.
Okay. Sam McBride, political editor for the newsletter. Thank you very much indeed. RHIinquiry.org is where you can find the totality of what's been given as evidence so far, or indeed our BBC News website.